Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Coming to you straight from a pod somewhere in the heart of San Francisco is today's guest. He's a guy who used to sell berries, and now he sells software. Things doing really well. It's just growing and growing and growing. His name, this former berry salesman who's coming to you from a pod, his name is Makita Mikado. He is the founder of PandaDoc. PandaDoc is an all-in-one solution to automate your contracts, proposals, quotes, and so much more. I invited him here to talk about how he started his business, how he grew it, what we can all learn from him. And this interview is sponsored by two companies. The first will host your website. The second will design, will get you beautiful designs. The hosting company is called HostGator. The design company is called DesignCrowd. I got to tell you guys about my experience with DesignCrowd. I'll do it later. But first, Makita, good to have you on here, man.
Absolutely. Andrew, it's my pleasure.
Dude, what's the deal with the pod? Where you were walking me through your office and then like that, you ended up in a pod. What is this pod that you're sitting in?
Oh man, it's so comfy and it isolates a lot of noise. I really like it.
That's all it is? It's just a seat with like an egg that the front is missing?
It is an egg.
It really does isolate a lot of noise. I asked you before that there was too much echo. You said, I got a solution. I didn't realize that little seat could do so much.
Yeah. This thing is very comfy, and I don't think it was very pricey. So if you got an office with a lot of noise, get an egg.
Sweet setup. Sit in an egg. All right. Let me hit you directly with the revenue number question. 2017, kind of three quarters away in, what kind of revenues did you do so far this year?
Yeah, we're on target to hit our goal,
which is
$10 million.
Can just to give people perspective of the growth, I have what I think is your 2016 revenue. Can I share it with the audience and you tell me if you think it's right or wrong, or if I got it right or wrong?
Sure.
$4 million in 2016.
Close enough. Very close.
What do you mean? What was the actual number? I'd like to see if we're right.
It's a couple points over 4 million, but it's irrelevant. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
So tell me about what this software does, and then we'll understand how you got here.
We help organizations to accelerate the way they transact with electronic quotes, proposals, contracts, signatures, payments, you name it. And so, in essence, that's PandaDoc. It's an all-in-one solution to help you make offers, negotiate on deals, and close.
Do you have a use case? And tell me if this is a good use case, actually. I wanted to get somebody to do our employee payment. Guy comes into my office. He tells me what he wants. And then he says, okay, I'll get you some paperwork. Immediately, I said, I think I'm done with you because I know what happens with paperwork. I leave it in the office. I forget to sign it, right? He would have just had one click, sent me a link with the quote, because the quote is pretty straightforward. He knows how many employees I have. He knows what I'm looking for, right? I get the quote. I okay it. He comes back to me with a contract. I don't have to sign anything on paper. I probably just digitally type in my name, and it goes into the document along with a few other things. And then he countersigns if he needs to, comes back to me, goes to him, it's saved. Is that basically it?
Pretty much. And if your guy is super advanced, or if he talked to anyone on our sales or customer success team, then would suggest that he takes that quote, merges it with the contract, and sends you a beautiful proposal that also has some marketing information on his business and why he's better, why he's different. And maybe he would even add a customer testimonial, a video testimonial, which is something that our product supports.
And you would review proposal. That.
Yeah, in the proposal. Because like essentially proposal could have anything you like. It could have a contract, it could have pricing information, it could have some marketing collateral. And you would review that. You'd know the moment you opened that proposal. So he would probably call you 30 minutes later to check on how well you received that proposal. And he would close the deal on the spot. So that's pretty much the workflow we're after.
I get it. I kind of feel like maybe this is what we should be using. We just started something called Bot Academy, where people can hire our team to create chatbots for them. And we are doing a lot of back and forth. I don't know why I didn't think of it. We could just create a simple proposal. We'll get on a call with you. If you like it, shoot you the proposal. If you agree with it, boom, we send you a contract, and I do want a contract now because people end up paying me, and then they don't follow up. And I say, can I give you at least your money back? I say, no, I guess they're worried I'm going to trash talk them, which I wouldn't. But what you're going to do is solve that if I use PandaDoc, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And they'll be able to sign the legally binding electronic signatures, which makes that deal as good as if, you know, you were to travel to their office and hand the paper.
Right. Let me ask you something. I've got to be honest with you. I kind of got the whole Barry thing by looking you up in preparation for this interview. And obviously you had this whole Barry thing that you did, and we'll ask about that. But I kind of feel, as I looked at your face when I said that Barry thing, that I lost you. Like, oh my God, another cliched interview with me. It's the same freaking goddamn Barry thing that they tell the story and they all think they're interesting. Am I right?
Actually, no.
No?
I like that story. So, I was a kid, right? I'm from
yes.
Belarus. Belarus was recovering from a massive collapse. It was a part of the Soviet Union when I was growing up, right? So the average salary in the country was like $100 a month,
mm-hmm.
or some maybe like $150 a month, which is not much, right? So we never had any money, and my family never had any money. So I had to be creative, and one of the businesses that I had, my first successful business, was to pick up berries and sell them. And I learned a lot, like, during that.
Like, what did you learn selling berries?
Oh, okay. So the first thing I learned is that you have to stand out of the crowd, because when I just started selling them, I went to the farmer's market and I sat in the corner where a bunch of other berry selling people were sitting, and I've sold nothing. I was like in the very, very corner. People were not stopping by. I was like really upset. I had to pick up those berries, go back home. I sold maybe like one little bucket, whatever. And then I was sitting on the bus stop ready to go home, and I was looking at those berries, and I realized they're going to go all bad by tomorrow if I don't sell them. So I had to kind of man up and start selling them right on the bus stop. And the food truck there was pretty good. And I don't know if the passersby were in need of berries, or they were just keen to buy from a 10-year-old, but that's what they did. And I sold all the berries within like an hour. So then I also learned the importance of thinking through your go-to-market model and bringing your product in front of as many eyeballs as possible, because, you know, your product is important, your sales strategy is important, but getting your product in front of a bunch of customers is vital. Otherwise, how else are you going to sell it? So that's another thing I learned.
So you're selling these berries. Do you bring the money back home to your parents, or are you using it for yourself to go out?
Yeah, we had a deal. It was half-half.
Half for your parents, because you got the berries from your grandfather, that you got to kick some cash back to your family.
Well, actually, I got them from my grandmother. My grandfather was using those berries to produce wine. And my grandma was not cool with that, because that wine was used to get him tipsy too many days, you know, a week. And she was like, we got to sell them. But selling was not a respectable thing to do back in Belarus and Soviet Union. It was pretty much illegal and had a lot of like negative connotation. The Communist Party was deciding on what to produce and which quantities, how to distribute.
This was back in the communist days?
Yeah, but you know, the culture gets built over the course of like many, many, many years.
I see. It's after the wall fell, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I see. But you're saying, look, this is part of the culture, right? Just because they say, hey, there's no more Soviet Union, doesn't mean tomorrow we're all going to try to be the next next billionaire. I got it. And this is
– people just think that selling – well, I wouldn't say they do think that now. But back in the day, they thought that selling is something that is just – it's not a respectable thing to do.
So why did you do it? How did you get past this shame or the feeling that you're doing something weirdo and asking people for money?
through sweat and tears. Like, it was not easy. It was my second business. The first one failed, actually.
What was the first one?
To wash people's cars.
Ah, okay. Why do you think that one failed?
Well, it failed because we were doing it on the territory owned by older kids.
I see.
And they kicked our asses out of that territory.
I see.
So...
I see. So this is like a turf wars. I thought you were going to say, dude, Andrew, Belarus barely had money at this point, and I'm asking people who have time to sit and wash their cars to give me money to wash their cars.
But you know what's cool?
What?
We figured out freemium model in that first car washing business.
What was the freemium model?
So we were trying to sell car washing to people, and we were like 7, maybe 8. Very, very young, right? And we were, trying to sell car washing, and we need car washing. Plus, like, from the little kids, because, like, they were afraid that we're going to mess up their cars. I don't know. Like, we were not able to sell that. And we were really shy to do that. But then when we did, we actually started washing expensive and dirty cars that were parked nearby a shopping center. And when the owners showed up, they were, like, pleasantly surprised. And like 4 out of 5 actually paid us gave us some change, and we actually we got to that after a few hours of just trying to sell it the normal way.
Yes.
And that didn't work, and then we almost got in a fight among ourselves, like 3 kids. And anyways, but freemium did work.
But I still don't understand. When everybody says this is not the right thing to do, when culturally selling is looked down on, when you have to, even in an environment like the US where it's accepted to be a salesperson, you still have to work on yourself to have the guts to ask someone to take money out of their pocket and give it to you in exchange for something that you have. When all that's going against you, what do you think it is about your makeup that says, I'm still going to sell. I need to sell. I can do this.
That's a good question that is going to get me into the soul searching mode. I don't know. Maybe
you don't know, but it's a part of who you are. It wasn't like I need money. It wasn't I'm looking at my parents and I think.
It was a part of I need money.
It was I need money.
Yeah.
I see.
It was a part of, like, again, I was, my parents were divorced, so like we had not a lot of money. Like, we were, I would say we were kind of like middle class.
Was it stigmatizing to have a parent, to have parents who are divorced?
Yeah.
In a country that has so many churches, like Belarus, I imagine, right?
Belarus, like, again, anything that was a part of Soviet Union has less religion.
So it's not stigmatizing because of the religion. It's stigmatizing for what?
No, I think like every kid, like in every corner of the world, would want to live in a full family, right?
I see.
So, if it's possible, but I think the reason why I got into sales was that I just wanted to do something in order to positively impact my life, life of my family. And I was probably raised the way by my mom that I'm not afraid to take chances. Like, I was probably giving more freedom than my friends, so that I was not afraid to take a shot, take a chance at trying to go wash people's cars or trying to go sell berries at the farmer's market. I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know how.
I think I'm getting it. So first of all, you've got this whole other stigma that seems bigger than selling, which is your parents aren't together. Number two, you got lack of money. Number three, my guess is you have something inside you, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, that just makes you into like a natural born entrepreneur, and you've got to express it. Am I right about all this? I'm seeing a little smirk. Am I a little off? Am I being too much of an armchair psychologist? You could be open with me.
Yeah, you sound like a guy who digs psychology. I like that. I like
all right,
that.
Let's go into business where I think I've got more more standing.
We can talk psychology all day long. I love that.
I do
just
too,
not
man.
About me. Just not about me. Okay.
No, I want only you. That's my problem. Okay. This is why, like, I'd be good to date, because all I would do is I just want to get to know the other person, deep psychological understanding. All right, but let's forget about that. Let's move on to the business.
You think you'd be good to date? It's like interesting. It's like, you can just ask.
I can ask a lot of stuff. 2007, you and your co-founder are building web content automation. What does that mean? What are you guys doing in 2007?
Yeah, we first started our first business around building web applications and building software for other companies.
Like what?
A lot of that software, like, and anything from social networks for travel to portals for Microsoft. Like, we even got that as a customer somehow.
Oh, so you were doing consulting work. They were getting, you're getting paid by the project. I see. And you were doing this for your clients. You had 400 products, you told our producer. What does that mean, 400 products? Could you resell them? Were the products that you owned, like extensions?
Okay, so here's the story.
Yeah, hit me.
First of all, I got this wonderful opportunity to fly to States. I got a visa, and I got a working visa for 3 months. J1 thing. So anyhow, I jumped on the plane, flew to States, built a few websites, which helped me to make a little bit of money to start a web design business there. Mm-hmm. Started a web design business. That web design business grew into more of a software development type of business. Mm-hmm. And that's when my co-founder and I started to work together. We've known each other years back, but that's when we started to cooperate. And once upon a time, we had to build this little extension for a web content management system. And once we've built it, we also found a marketplace. It's kind of like similar, like Apple App Store. You can just submit your software and they would sell it for you. Okay. And the thing started to sell. And then the creators of that content management system emailed us asking us to open source the extension because it was so critical. Mm-hmm. Which for me back, it was like, oh my God, the gods themselves came down from Olymp to... Mm-hmm. You know, say hi to Mikita. Like, I gotta pack my things, move back to Belarus, and we gotta do this for real. So that's what we did. We brought many of our former classmates on board and started just cranking out those extensions for web content management systems.
Which ones? Which platforms?
Yeah, it was .NET Nuke. It was CS card, kind of like Magento. We even built something for WordPress. I'm trying to think what else. We built something for SharePoint.
I see. These are all these different content management systems and e-commerce software. You're building extensions for them. Are you selling the extensions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. What are some of the features of the extensions? What do they do?
Anything from a blog module to a video gallery module.
Okay, so if I have a CMS that's designed for text and I want to add video and multiple videos, I would buy your extension. Your extension would allow me to present the videos in a gallery so people can see them all. That's what you are doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's exactly what we've done.
From what I read, you got to I'm sorry, we have such a lag. It sounds like I'm talking over you. It's because there's a lag and neither one of us is realizing it. But from what I read, you got to about $30,000 in monthly revenue from that. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, actually, it was a little better than that. At a peak, I think we were at like $700,000-$800,000 a year, which in Belarus means that the staff that we had was pretty – we had like 30 people on the team. So, mm-hmm. So it was a sizable, small business, you know, small technology business. And, we learned a lot of things while doing that. And we also learned that with the number one thing probably was that, running a business that depends on a bunch of other technology platforms that change all the time with 400 plus little extensions, it's just it's going to get you gray hair really fast.
Because each one of them needs to be updated, and each one of them needs a different sales page, different customer support for all of them. Lots of little money, lots of little products. Okay, and then you make a big leap to a new product. We'll talk about it in a second. First, I've got to tell everyone about a company called Design Crowd. Makita, do you know Design Crowd?
I will find out all about
right
it in
now.
A second.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I thought I knew this. Here's the idea behind Design Crowd, and this is what I thought was what made it special. Design Crowd is a site where you go to and you say, here's what I need. And you describe it really simply. They have these forms that make it easy for you to describe. You just answer questions in the form, hit submit, boom, and there's a proposal. For me, I needed new cover art for my podcast. I said, here's what I wanted. Here are the colors. Here's the layout, etc. Most recently, we needed a new certification logo. People are learning how to build chatbots from us, and they get certified, and I needed a logo they can put on their website to communicate that we stand behind them and that they could be trusted to build great chatbots. So you just, whatever it is, you go to their site, and you fill out a form, answer a few questions, you hit submit, and then you end up getting dozens of designs. All I did was pay for the cheapest option that I could. I got, in the first case, 97 designs. In the second one, 191 designs. It's fantastic. Almost every single one of them is different. Some people think alike, or some people submit variations that are a little too similar. But we're talking about dozens and dozens of different designs. And sometimes when I see someone try something new that I hadn't thought of, I feel like, all right, you know what? That's the direction I should have asked for. It helps me not just see lots of options, but see different direction for what I want for my design. What you do then is you start giving them feedback. So they all learn what you like, what you don't like, the direction you want to go in, what you don't want to do. And then they go back and they do a little bit more work. And you can start interacting with the ones you like and dismissing the ones you don't like. And in the end, you only pick one design, and that's the one you pay for. And you're guaranteed to love it. I heard this for a long time. It's not until I actually saw 191 designs. This is just a few days ago. 191 designs. That I finally realized this is not like other services that are similar. This is a lot of great designs. These people are pulling in designers who are just rock stars. And so I love it. I'm going to keep using them every time I need a design. If you're out there and you want to try them, whether it's for a web design, brochure, logo, cover art, new certification, whatever it is, ebook covers. I've seen people do book covers. I've seen people do. All you have to do is go to the special URL where they're going to give you a phenomenal offer. It is designcrowd.com/Mixergy. You're going to save up to $100 when you do that. It says very clearly in the center, trusted by Mixergy. I'm going to tell you 100%, not just trusted by me, Andrew Warner. I stake my reputation on how freaking good they are. I love them. I've used them. I'll continue to use them. I'm really happy with them. And I urge you to go check out for any design that you need, designcrowd.com/Mixergy. Man, they're that good. All right, there's a sponsor. Makita, I'm telling you, well, you probably have a staff of designers, don't you?
You know what's funny? I think my assistant used Design Crowd for helping me to get hoodies for our head of finance and one of our analysts. Those guys had birthdays pretty close to each other.
So you got designs just for them from Design Crowd?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't really remember, but anyways, like,
yeah, you know, frankly, even teams that have big designers often will go to Design Crowd for one simple reason. They want variety. They want to stop thinking the same way and have a new perspective. Actually, not a new perspective, but dozens, sometimes hundreds of new perspective from experienced, phenomenal designers. Anyway, Design Crowd, I'm glad that they're there as a sponsor. Let's go on to the next part of your story, and that is Quote Roller. Where did you get the idea for Quote Roller? This took you on a whole new path. One product, one focus. Where did you get the idea for it?
Internal pain.
What was the pain that you had internally?
Sending sales proposals.
To whom?
All those customers that needed customizations of the hundreds of extensions that we built. Half of that business was to sell software. The other half was to provide services, customizations on top of that software.
And so you said, look, I'm having trouble doing it. But you know what? 2011, there was Quote software out there on the internet, wasn't there?
Of course, but nothing we liked.
What didn't you like? What's one thing that you said none of these people get that we need to do ourselves?
Yeah, we did not find one solution that would allow you to build proposals, make edits to them, collaborate on them, and send them electronically to the end customer so that the whole experience seems like something that, I don't know, I want to experience myself. So there were a few web-based tools that we tried. We didn't really like them. But they were like, it was all very, very small. Like, those were the first days. It was 2010. Actually, we started to conceptualize it in 2009, like really early. And finally, we decided to build it. We thought we can do a better job building a product that allows you to put together a proposal and send it to a customer.
So, you know what? I'm looking at an early version of the site. It says create, track, and send proposals. Easy way to sign up for free. Clear set of features embedded in this. Everything looks like it makes sense. And boy, your design style was spot on. And still, when our producer asked you, you said, I made a lot of mistakes. And then when they pushed you to say, what kind of mistakes? You said, you know, I should have sold it before writing the first line of code. Why should you have sold it? What would you have gotten that you didn't get as you built it for your own needs?
Yeah, learning. I'd answer it with one word, learning.
What do you think you would have learned, or what wouldn't you have done, or what would you have done differently if you had gotten that feedback earlier on?
I would learn a lot more about the market I'm trying to sell into. I'd learn a lot more about the feature set that needs to be prioritized. Mm-hmm. I would learn a lot more about the best go-to-market model that we can put together, and predictability of all the go-to-market models that we're trying to employ. I would also learn that the importance of having customers that act as your advocates and that work closely with you in order to make your product and business better.
I see. So it's not just about the features you would have learned by bringing in customers earlier on. It's that they also would have been advocates for you and helped you promote this to other people.
Absolutely. And not just that. They would also be very vocal about maybe changes to the business model or pricing or the way we do support, and they would have this like direct communication channel with me. The problem was that I was based in Belarus physically, and Belarusian electronic signing laws are as such that you cannot use software like Quadroller or now PandaDoc. So we had to do all that remotely. And instead of going, like moving forward and just selling the product from one customer to another, we built actually a pretty good inbound marketing machine that attracted a ton of traffic. And then the traffic was going through a free trial, and then we were trying to convert those trials into paying customers.
What was the inbound process that you did that did so well for you?
Yeah, lots of SEO, some SEM, lots of publishing, lots of distribution of our product onto all kinds of marketplaces, software marketplaces. We've integrated the product with a few CRMs down the line so that we get into the app stores that those CRMs have.
I see. It's not really a CRM product. It doesn't call for CRM integration, but you're saying by having a WordPress integration, you ended up getting more customers. Is that right?
Actually, it does.
How?
Well, whenever you have a deal within your CRM system, you got to send a proposal to that client in order to close the deal, in order to make it won, you have to generate that proposal somehow. And the data sits inside of your CRM system. So what's the point of copying and pasting that data from the CRM into the document?
You mean like a form on my site where somebody would fill in some information about themselves? You're saying, no, what else?
Let's imagine you were a web development agency, right? Mm-hmm. And you got a sales team, and that sales team needs to work out of some kind of database. It needs to host all of the client account information, lead prospect information in some kind of database. That would be a CRM system. And they would have deals, and they would move those deals to different stages, you know, like I reached out, and there is an interest, and then I sent a proposal,
yes,
and then I closed that deal. So, like, that send a proposal stage requires a generation. It requires to generate some kind of document, and that document takes data out of the CRM system because hello, you know, first name makes it just. You have to copy and paste and replace and blah, blah, blah. And that integration was actually, those integrations with CRM systems were very, very, very useful. They are useful.
I see. I guess I was thinking CMS, which is like WordPress, but you're saying CRM, which is like address book or Pipedrive or something.
Yeah.
Got it. I see.
Great partner of ours. Yeah.
Pipedrive.
Yeah.
Ah, you know what? We use Pipedrive to manage our sales. I got to check out the integration. You mean PandaDoc does?
You got to check out the integration between Pipedrive and PandaDoc.
Okay.
That's for sure. And you can turn it on from, I think, either side, either from Pipedrive or from PandaDoc.
I see. Okay. So you're saying, look, we did a lot of content. We did some SEO on it, bought some ads, SEM, search engine monetization. We also integrated, and I've known that too, that when you integrate, people are much more likely to find you because we're in our app a lot. Surprising that I didn't see this. And also sometimes the integration partners do a big promotional push where they help you out. I also saw that at the time you were doing some blogging. Am I right? Do I have my timeline right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. You said to our producer, we finally started to talk to customers, and then we realized, you know what? This product is kind of limited,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
What's the limitation that you discovered, and how did talking to customers give you that realization?
Yeah, thanks to the inbound, we had a lot of people signing up for the product and quite a few people using it. But the thing is, not many of them found our product mission critical. And the ones that did find it mission critical were missing a number of features. However, their voice was, and their feedback was diluted by the feedback we were getting from kind of like passersby. So that really, I think that was a pretty big strategic mistake that I made back then.
You know what? I'm looking for it and I can't find it right now, but I saw at one point early on, you were trying to get feedback from your customers and you embedded a Google form into your blog, and the headline for it was something like, I mean, and this could be the exact phrase, it was something like, what should we build into Quote Roller? And what you're saying is when we're opening ourselves up to everyone, and this is the way we take our feedback in, we could get anyone asking for anything. And the vast majority of people could be asking for something that the ones who are willing to pay, the small minority are willing to pay, have no interest in. And it wasn't until you started talking to customers that you understood that differentiation. How did you start talking to customers? What was your process for doing that?
Well, I started with the ones that were raising their hand.
Who said, I want to talk to you.
Yeah, I want to talk to you. So that was the first step. The second step was to reach out to ones that know of us, say signed up for an account but never gone anywhere. So that kind of like opens up your funnel a little wider. And then finally, go ahead and try to approach people that know of you personally, but have no idea about your business, but seem like a good profile, right? So like,
I see.
They were taking the meetings and then, you know, had conversations with us and so on. And then finally, the last step was to actually try to talk to people that seem like a good fit, but haven't heard of neither myself nor the business.
And this was you making these phone calls, you talking to potential customers and ideal. It was.
Yeah.
Why did it have to be you? You had 30 plus people working in your office. Any one of them could have done it. You're smiling as I say it. Why did it need to be you? That seems like a good reason for it.
Well, not many of us were able to speak English. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
We all were able to speak English. It's just that I spent more time in the U.S. so that I can kind of do it.
Okay.
Another reason is that, again, selling is not a reputable thing to do in the Soviet Union. So, asking people for feedback and then ending the call with like, well, would you consider blah, 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 is kind of selling. And finally, I don't want to have any filters. I don't want to have any filters in order to, when I'm trying to learn and make some decisions that are based on that learning.
I see. You want to just go directly to the customer, understand, see the little nuances. Was there anything that was especially insightful in that early batch of phone calls? Did you do it by phone? I'm imagining Skype, right?
Yeah. I don't really remember what we used, but...
Okay. Was there any specific insight that you remember?
Actually, a lot of things. I remember that we somewhat pivoted our product. I think that was the time when we invested quite a bit in the CPQ module of Quadroller. I do believe that was the trigger for CRM integrations, as well as certain kinds of CRM integrations. But I'm not 100% sure. All I remember, and I'm sorry.
It's been a few years.
Yeah, it's been a few years. I do remember that we've changed our product pipeline as well as to... we just changed the attitude towards the way we run business. Like, we kind of like learned that we're not Steve Jobs.
Uh-huh.
And we got to actually be a little more humble and think, you know, like, do not try to rely on our vision and vision solely, because like, we know what they need, what the customers need, because we were in their shoes. Well, you know, our shoes are different from someone else's shoes. So, yeah.
I get that. And you know what? I can see why you would think that, because that you would know it. Again, going back, a lot of times I see people's first versions of pretty ugly pieces of garbage that they're kind of proud was ugly. And still, yours, your very first version, at least what I can see here when I go to Internet Archive, looks really good. It's the design is of the time, but it was really spot on of the time. So I could see how someone who would design this way, who would understand the features, who has the experience, would say, I got this, I know it. But even you needed to talk to your customers. And as a result of talking to these customers, you said, we need to change. And one thing that you did was, you tell me if I got this right, you added electronic signatures. You decided, you know what, we're going to redesign the whole thing. Actually, you know what, I'm taking it back. I'm kind of going through my notes here. And what I see is a redesign complete with UI snapshots, took you about a month to put this whole thing together. And part of the new feature set was electronic signatures, which were important. No.
And Andrew, I do not remember. I do not actually think that e-signatures was that
okay.
thing.
What was it
added
then?
Or changed? My intuition,
yes,
tells me that was the CPQ or the like in-depth development of the CPQ, or the integrations and the integrations with the CRMs. But again, like.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I don't
okay.
remember.
All right.
Yeah.
You know what? Better than I'm asking you to go back in time and search your memory of the company than search your soul to understand why you're a salesperson in Belarus, right? So the questions are at least getting a little bit more tactical, more directly related to business. What are you thinking?
What am I thinking about jumping to the present days? Well, I'm going to be a little sharper, that's for sure.
Okay. All right. Let me take a moment here, talk about my sponsor, and then we're going to come back and see how that led to a whole new shift, right? From your understanding, somehow you ended up with PandaDoc. And I'll find out about that in a moment. First, I've got to tell everyone about a company called HostGator. If you're out there and you're listening to me, one of the things you might be noticing about Makita's story is that he tried a bunch of different things, a lot of different ideas, and he had the resources to do it. He had the wherewithal to do it. And he kept experimenting until he found the one that made the most sense. And today he's got a phenomenal business. One of the things that I like about HostGator is that they have a hosting package that includes unlimited domains, which means you have an idea on Monday. You could by Tuesday have it up on a new domain, new site, new design, new offer page, new landing page, new way of collecting email addresses and see, does anyone even care about it? And then maybe you don't even care about it. So on Wednesday, you have a brand new site, brand new domain, brand new everything, and you're ready to roll. You just try something new. I've said this over and over. Mixergy was just one little thing. These interviews was one little thing that I tried and it just took off so much that I loved it and I focused on it. And the only reason I was able to do it is I had unlimited domains. So if you're out there and you want to experiment, I urge you to check out the special URL where you can get unlimited domains, one-click install of things like WordPress, unmetered bandwidth, so you're not like constantly making sure that you didn't get too much bandwidth today and that you're going to be charged too much next month. Here's the URL, hostgator.com/Mixergy, hostgator.com/Mixergy for $4.98 you're going to get per month, $4.98 a month, you're going to get unlimited domains on that one hosting package. And of course, if you have a hosting company and you hate them, switch over to HostGator. They will scale up with your business. I started with a lower plan and then we moved right up to one that can accommodate over 1,000 people hitting our site at once. A lot of stability, a lot of support. I really like them. HostGator.com/Mixergy. All right, Makita. So help me understand then what took you from this business that was starting to go well, where everything made sense to PandaDoc.
Yeah. At some point, we looked at our customer base and got to, I think, to the critical mass of the conversations with the best customers of Quotroller. So we got to the point where we realized, all right, so the product is used for more than just proposals. It's used for proposals, for contracts. People are asking if we're going to add forms. They're asking if we're going to add presentations. And it is actually used to close deals and in some cases also get paid. At the time, we were doing something like $30,000 in monthly recurring revenue, maybe like $40,000. And we looked at the amount of proposal in total proposals that Quotroller was helping our clients to transact, and it was more than $500 million a year. So the opportunity of owning the entire transactional workflow, the process of selling anything expensive, anything that's moved by paperwork, was a really interesting opportunity, and we decided to take on this opportunity. We thought we can do it.
Were people starting to use your software beyond where you thought it would go, or were they leading you? They were, I see. So it wasn't meant to collect payment, but they found a way to do that.
Yeah. Some people just figured it out on their own, and they were complaining that the product has proposals all over the place. And then, again, when you talk to clients, if you're an internet entrepreneur, it's easy to kind of like get caught and try to be 100% digital and never even talk to your clients. But the truth is, you actually have to do that, and it's very, very valuable. And it's never just like one way or another. A combination of the old world techniques and the new world techniques is what helps to build a very healthy business. So anyhow,
how do you do it today?
How do we do today?
How do you talk to your clients today to continue that thread?
Yeah, so I try to visit some of our clients when I leave San Francisco Bay Area. And when I talk to them, I also ask if I can record the conversation in order to share with my product team, with my business leaders, so that it's not just me who absorbs that feedback, it's the rest of the company.
I see. And then you'll play back for the team excerpts of what you've heard.
Yeah.
Wow. So you go in, are you sitting and interviewing them the way I am now, or are you watching them do what they do with your software and then the rest of the business?
It depends on the goal.
Okay. It's still you doing it. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, like, not just me. You know, our customer success team does the same exact thing, but I try to do that whenever I have time. Okay. I find those sessions very valuable and very, very useful.
Do you have a script that you go through to understand what to ask or to keep it consistent?
I make one before I get to meet someone. But again, it really depends on the goal. For instance, recently we've made a major update to our product, which is not yet public and blah, blah, blah. And in order to make sure that what we build makes sense to the end users, like I'm going to do those sessions. And those sessions are going to be solely focused on this particular part of the product that we're about to launch. Depending on like what's happening inside of the business, I may be checking on how our customer success team interacts with the with this or that customer on the journey that they've gone through in order to become a customer, or on the product itself. So it really depends.
I see. Okay. So you're checking in. You're also getting a sense of what their experience is with the people on your team and so on. Roughly around that point in the story, the one where you're doing 30,000 a month or so in sales, where you're trying to, where you're starting to figure it out, you started to raise money, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
First round, according to AngelList, seems to be the seed, $655,000 from Kima Ventures. Is that right?
Yeah.
How'd you hook up with them? That's a French company, isn't it?
French Israeli fund. Yeah.
Okay.
I got introduced to Kima by one of our advisors. He's a founder of Pipedrive, actually.
Ah, yeah, they're from Belarus, aren't they?
Estonia.
Okay, got it.
Close enough.
Close enough. Yes. Are they even close to each other on the map? No, they're not.
Yeah, kind of. You know,
okay.
It's like San Francisco and San Diego, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
About the same.
I got the map here with Belarus. I have tons of tabs open. I see. Okay, so you get introduced to them, and they, I'm guessing at that point, they see you've got traction, you've got revenue, they make an investment in the business. How did it shape your business now to suddenly have investors?
Mm. Yeah, you know, it allowed us to make a lot more mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and make a lot more moves that turned out to be the right ones. I think it accelerated our learning and it accelerated our growth.
All right. So you get this funding. Things are starting to get faster. We asked you about the challenge that you have, and it's working with people. How's working with people been a challenge for you?
Well, I'm an engineer and by education. Every business is built, run by people. That's really all that matters.
Uh-huh.
Product is important. Yeah, go-to-market, I mentioned go-to-market is important, but all that is done by people. And the ability to excite people, ability to help them learn, ability to influence people in a positive way, to resolve conflicts within the team when they arise. is something that is very, 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 very hard to learn without doing it. So you actually have to do it. And that's the, from my perspective, like so far from what I learned, you know, that's the biggest part of all. And that's the hardest part of any business.
You're an engineer, but you're not the CTO. Your co-founder is the CTO. You're the CEO. You're the guy in charge of dealing with people, of managing them, of growing them. You had an issue where two people on your team got into a fight. Was this a fist fight?
No. Just
an argument.
Argument.
And what did you take away from that argument? What happened there, and then what did you take away from it?
So I fired both.
And, you fired both?
Yeah.
What were they arguing about so loudly?
I don't want to get into that. Like that's.
What's the topic of it? Does it have to do with work, or are they arguing about personal life?
It was work that turned into the personal, but it's like it doesn't matter.
Here's what I have for my notes. I'm not going to overstep because this is what you're telling our producer. You said, look, there was a micromanaging situation, somebody who's, I guess, micromanaging the other person, and you didn't act fast enough on the issue.
Yes, no. So there were two parts.
All right. I won't let you get too deep into it, but you saw the two of them arguing and you said, you know what? I'm going to step in and I'm going to let them go. What did you learn about that experience that kept you from letting that kind of thing happen again in the future?
Well, it set the business back quite a bit. Both employees were good employees that could have impacted the business in a positive way. And I could have been the mediation party that could help them work through the issue. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you're successful at it, sometimes you're not, but at least you got to try. So that was just one of the HR stories that I think I could have done better.
So how did you learn how to do this? On Glassdoor, I'm looking to see, is Makita considered an asshole by everyone? No, people like you.
Glassdoor is, I don't know. I don't trust Yelp much when I pick places to eat, and I get punished for that.
You know what? Largely, your reviews seem, I can't freaking get a full Glassdoor account. Those people drive me freaking nuts. I'm trying to tell them I'm doing this for interviews. They say, well, put your salary in first, and then we'll give you unlimited reviews of company. Cool. What salary do I have? I'm running Mixergy here. That's all. There's no salary. But they want you to put in your salary before you can get to see how other people rate other businesses. Maybe there's someone who's listening to me who can help me out with these Glassdoor people. But overall, it seems like people kind of like working with you. What did you learn? How did you become a better manager?
Well, first of all, in the software business, we all work using this, right? Our heads.
Yes.
And therefore, we got to be creative. We have to be able to come up with different ideas and then execute on them. And creative jobs are not managed by fear. There are different parts of human brain that are responsible for different types of reactions. But we'll not go deep into that. What I learned personally is, first of all, I have to try to give people as much ownership as possible. I do have to guide, you know, I do have to show direction and share the vision and communicate that vision over and over and over and over and over. But I have to do everything in my power so that the people that work with me feel that they own whatever they're responsible for and feel empowered in order to make things happen.
And so how do you do that?
Step out of the way, try to provide as much resources as possible, try to hook my team members up with someone who's been there, done that, and help them learn that way. Try to, well, Try to help them in the ways that are not confronting with what they do. Like, and that's very, very difficult. Sometimes you just want to get shit done and you want to do it fast and you know how to do it.
Yes.
But you know that when you, like, when that's what's going to happen, when you're going to take a step forward and just do someone's job for them, then they're going to feel micromanaged and they will not learn. And like, sometimes you just have to let people make mistakes. And, so all that is very, you know, it's very hard. Like, intuitively, you're trying to optimize for speed. You're trying to take the fastest path towards the goal. And sometimes you have to do it. But like, figuring out the cases when you should slow down and let people do their thing and maybe fail, you know, if it's not too costly, that's the education budget that you have to put aside. But yeah, so like those are just a few things that I think that were they're very important. Also, the importance of giving bad news early on is I cannot emphasize this more. This is very, very, very
the importance of getting what early on?
Giving bad feedback early on.
Let the person know this is not what I'm looking for. As early in hiring process or
in any kind of process.
Always. As soon as I see a problem, I should be vocal about it.
Exactly. But do it in a very, very smart way. Like problems happen, you know, like everybody makes mistakes. I make mistakes. We're not perfect. No one is perfect. Figuring out a way to turn mistakes into the learning experience, into learning experiences is what I'm, you know, I don't think I'll ever be done learning that, but that's an important realization that I came to over the course of the last few years.
Okay. Is there a methodology? Is there someone who helped you learn this? Is there someone we could go learn from?
Well, my colleagues. A bunch of books. Books are... So I use... I like to read books. I also use Audible to just listen to stuff while I'm getting to work or getting back home. Let's say 15 Commencements of Conscious Leadership is a fantastic book.
What is it? 15?
Commencements of Conscious Leadership.
Okay.
Quiet Leadership is a really good one too.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that that talks about management, influence, and neuroscience is something that I'd probably dig.
I see it. Wow, I can't believe you were helped that much from this book, and I never even heard of it. I thought that I, through doing these interviews, I came up with a really good bookcase of books for business. There it is. Quiet Leadership is by David Rock, and 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership is by Jim Detmer, I guess is the pronunciation, and Diana Chapman.
Yeah.
All right. Those are really good recommendations. By the way, we were talking about Glassdoor. I don't know if you know VaynerMedia, but if you want to see some of the most interesting Glassdoor reviews, I hate working there. Some of them are just so pissed.
Working with Gary?
Well, yeah. I've had nothing but positive experiences with Gary. I think he needs to address this whole Glassdoor thing. I know he's talked about it a little bit, but man, he's got to talk about it internally with his team. I'll leave it to him. I got to have him back on here, and we got to talk about that and a couple of other things. All right, but for now, anyone who wants to check out your site can go to Panda Doc. I really dig the T-shirt, by the way. I think that it actually doesn't look like a techie T-shirt. It just looks like a cool San Francisco T-shirt. What's on the bottom of it? Smart Document Automation.
Yeah, it says San Francisco, Minsk.
Minsk.
Yeah.
All right, so there it is, Panda Doc, and don't forget my two sponsors, the company, which gets you phenomenal designs. They showered me with so many different options. I had a hard time picking one, but I did. I picked it. It's called Design Crowd. Check them out at designcrowd.com/Mixergy. And if you want to get your website hosted right, hostgator.com/Mixergy. Thanks so much for doing this interview.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thank you.
Straight from the pod. Bye, everyone.